everybody. So it is, what, June 23rd? Is that what today is?
Yes, it is. 2 days after our solstice.
Yeah, 2 days after the solstice, 2 days after the most recent fundraiser. But honestly, and I realize that this isn't what we really talk about here on Ask an Atheist, Mike, but I would be remiss if I didn't give you an opportunity to talk about Superman for a moment.
A Superman?
The movie, the new one.
Oh, Man of Steel.
Man of Steel, yeah.
That they actually only say the word Superman twice in the movie.
Do they? They say the word Superman twice in the movie. Okay.
Yeah.
Did they say it at all in the first Christopher Reeves movie?
Been oh, all the time.
Oh, okay, cool.
That's
all
what right. they call him.
Well,
it's his name it's to his most name. People.
Got it. Okay. So, you know, when you're not here with Ask an Atheist, you do a couple other podcasts, one being Mike and Paul Save the Universe, which mm-hmm. is about comic books. But I've been told by people both who are fans of comic books and people who follow us online that you didn't really care for the new Zack Snyder film.
I did not.
Okay.
So. I guess, in short, my problem with the new Man of Steel movie, and there's a lot of good stuff in it. I'm not one of those fashionably snarky people.
Got it. That would be me.
I talked about this a bit on an episode we did on Ask an Atheist a while ago called Superman is Greater Than Jesus.
Yeah.
Where Superman is something that actually means a great deal to me and is one of the few fictional characters when they're done wrong in a major medium bothers me.
Yeah.
And actually angers me. Probably because Superman is one of the characters who helped shape, you know, my view of how people with power should live, how people, what responsibilities they have to people who are less powerful. And that's really at the core of my problem with the Man of Steel movie.
Right.
It's that Superman is essentially Godzilla in this movie.
Okay.
Oh, dear.
That he is, if there's anything that we think of Superman. Superman protects people.
Right.
He's an altruist. He's someone who's motivated by compassion. That he knows that he has abilities beyond the ken of mortal men. And he thinks that he has an obligation to use these to protect people, to help them feel safe.
But that let's get to the meat of it. That was the problem. As you said, he was a Godzilla movie. This was a destruction porn movie, is
yes.
how you describe it to me.
Yeah, you look destruction porn. You know, you look at something like the Roland Emmerich, Michael Bay type things where monuments and massive buildings are brought down mostly for our own visceral enjoyment.
Yeah.
Completely dehumanizing all of the people inside of them. In this movie, Superman uses the city of Metropolis as a weapon against a bad guy.
Okay.
That he is intentionally flying him through buildings which are falling behind them, 9/11 style, by the dozens. And at the end of this movie, Metropolis looks like a post-apocalyptic landscape. And Superman seems to not even have given a second thought to all of these people who are running and screaming and having concrete and glass and steel and raining death coming down upon them. And what really bothers me is that Superman is someone who ideally should never think that there's a thing as acceptable collateral damage.
Right.
In this movie, it's like people are dead by the tens of thousands.
Well here's the thing, is the way people have been describing the new Superman movie to me, it sounds a bit like Transformers 3, where they, you know, where the end of the movie is them basically getting all Van Halen on my hometown of Chicago, just destroying things left and right. But even in that movie, The town had already been mostly abandoned by then, or was it at least under siege? The downtown area was empty, so people weren't dying by the thousands. But that wasn't happening here.
No, the destruction comes upon people by surprise.
Yeah,
and you see them running away and having things. You see them get yanked up by doomsday machines and slammed into the ground.
Right.
And throughout the movie, we see several instances where, I mean, of course, this is Superman. You see bad guy attacks a helicopter. Helicopter starts spinning out of control. You're like, okay, Superman's going to save it now. Oh, I guess he doesn't.
Well, okay.
You know, one of the things that occurred to me, I was, you know, revisiting our episode a year later, Superman is Greater Than Jesus, where, you know, we look at how some of the bad guys in comic books are indistinguishable from the God of the Old Testament.
Well, here's the thing.
And one of the things that occurred to me is, hey, you know what? The studio is actually priming congregations with sermons where you can compare your own work to that of Superman and say Superman is basically equated with Jesus. And now, having this feedback from the series...
Here's the thing, is you did this episode, Superman is Greater Than Jesus. So a lot of people might be asking, why do I want to talk about the Superman movie on Ask an Atheist? And this is it, is we talked about the morality of Superman traditionally in his home media, comic books, as someone who had a morality that was greater than Jesus. And it sounds like in this movie, that's completely gone.
He's basically Gort from A Day the Earth Stood Still.
He sounds a little bit more like the Old Testament god who nuked an entire city because he didn't like the way they ran the restaurants.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what he sounds like to me.
It seems like the innocent people that are around him, I mean, ideally Superman is someone who should be constantly worried about these people, and these people not only being safe, but feeling safe.
Yeah.
And here he doesn't even care.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. So if you'd like to talk about this or other religious themes, you can give us a call at 253-584-1480. You know, that's the other interesting thing here is that the mythology of Superman, it's important to you, it's meaningful to you, you derive meaning from it, but you don't think back from Superman is going to come back from the dead sometime in your lifetime and whisk us all to Krypton.
No, but technically in the comics, he's come back from the dead twice.
Well, yeah, it's a theme. So it's been a very newsworthy week for us, not just because of the movies, but one of the organizations that I've spent a lot of time arguing about and screaming about before I was an atheist and after an atheist, I became an atheist activist, has closed its doors in the last week. Exodus International, a ministry dedicated to curing homosexuality with prayer and religious observance, will close after 37 years. Leader Alan Chambers renounced the idea that homosexuality could be cured, apologized for the shame and trauma the group had inflicted. He also said that gays had been wrongly made to feel rejected by God, and that Christians should accept them even if they believe homosexuality is a sin. Now, this has been... To put it nicely, we've been kind of arguing a little bit about this one. I think it's a real apology. There are things we definitely agree on, but mm-hmm. This is a radio show, so let's start with the things we don't agree on. I think this is an apology you don't, Mike. We've heard a lot of people why it's been an apology. I'd like you to have a chance to tell us why it's not.
Well, looking at the speech itself, I think a lot of people read the headline and get really excited about this, but sprinkled throughout Johnny Appleseed style are statements that undermine the entire apology in the first place.
Yeah.
And it feel a bit like him crossing his fingers while saying it. He says things like, I'm not going to apologize for the things that scripture says about sex. I'm not going to apologize for what it says about homosexuality or marriage. And in another place, he says that despite this apology, my views have not changed from where they were 10 years ago. And that's a really weird thing to put into a speech where you're basically saying that you are different from where you were 10 years ago.
I think there's a reason for that. And here's where we sort of agree is we don't think that he's magically become not a bigot.
No.
He's still the same guy. He's still the guy who was at the head of an organization who wanted gay people to think themselves into 1950s sitcom style lifestyle for 40 years. This is what they wanted. He's still at the head of that organization. They haven't closed the doors yet, and that's part of what we have to talk about is. Mm-hmm. You don't think that... So what kind of stuff was he saying that makes you think that it wasn't an apology?
Well, it's, I guess, the sprinkled in not reallys that I see in there.
Yeah.
I mean, because if it's somebody who's genuinely sorry, that it really would imply that your views have changed about homosexuality and gays and lesbians being less than others. And yeah, he'll say that in other statements. But when you say things along the lines of my attitude towards marriage and my views have not changed at all in the past 10 years, 10 years ago, he was still employing these shame-based tactics that yeah. are demonstrably psychologically harmful to the people that are oftentimes, as children, put in there against their will.
All right. I think it is an apology. Now, there's a huge catch there. And part of the reason I think it's an apology is because of what he's saying. And we've got some quotes here. I am sorry that some of you spent years working through the shame and guilt you felt when your attractions didn't change, Chambers wrote in a statement on his website. I am sorry that I failed to share publicly that the gay and lesbian people I know were every bit as capable of being amazing parents as the straight people that I know. I am sorry that I have communicated that you and your families are less than me and mine. He also said, I think it's really is time for the church to turn around and listen to the people who are screaming with a fever pitch about the things that the church has done to hurt them, and we must own that. And then, all right, last one. My beliefs about sex and sexuality and sexual expression are that God created his original intent was sexual expression between one man and one woman for one lifetime in the bonds of marriage, and that's the truth I live by. So I can't apologize for that. Hang on. But I do believe so many of us who hold to these scriptural beliefs have wielded them as a sword so often. We've been involved in a culture war that really literally has claimed untold lives. And so I think we have to really step back and realize what we have waged war for. Now, hang on. This is... this. by the standards by which we apologize in this society, and this is actually a critique I don't have about Exodus International, but about society at large, is we view apology as weakness. If somebody comes forward and says that I have a heartfelt apology, I have been wrong, and this is what I have done wrong. Here are my list of transgressions, and I ask for your forgiveness. We view that mainly because of the political, for whatever social reason, we view that as a weakness and as a failure. And that's something that I promised myself when we did the show that I wouldn't do. That if I made a mistake, I would own it immediately. And by the standards of American, by the standards of American apologies, he hasn't doubled down. He's talked about, he's talked about what he's done wrong. He's been specific about the harm he has caused. I think we have to acknowledge that. That said, when you're a zealot, and this man is a zealot, anything you do, good, evil, you can just explain away by waving the God flag. This guy thinks that when he was telling people that they should be godly and they should do this and they should pray it away and you should follow what it says in Leviticus, he thought that he was backed by God, that he had supernatural authority to act that way. And now he's changing, not because God told him not to. That's not it at all. So he thinks he's still right. But what he's saying, and this is why I think it's a victory and why we accept the apology, because it's no longer even socially acceptable in his screwy little part of the world that this is the way to be, that we should treat gay people there. There are still going to be a lot of things in his. This is what you really wanted to talk about, which was these people aren't going away.
No. Primarily, I want to first say what I agree with you said is that it is a victory. That there is an organization that did untold harm to people that doesn't exist anymore. Now, the pieces of that organization, the people, are not going to go anywhere, and I think several of them are going to break off and form their own little groups that are probably even worse.
Yeah.
So they don't have the centralized power that they had before, and probably the money. But I think a lot of them will continue to go on. I guess my problem is when he says things like, and this is the quote, "The shutting down of Exodus doesn't mean I believe anything differently than I did a decade ago. When my message was different than it is today, I'm not saying that we abandon what we believe. What I get here is what I hear a lot from a lot of politicians who had previously said things really horrible about women or rape.
Yeah.
And they're saying the problem here isn't the message. It's a delivery. And I worry that what we're going to see here is the next evolution of homophobia. That obviously, in the same way we talk about racism, that there are racists in this country who, in the 50s and 60s, openly said things like the superiority of the white race from the Senate floor.
Yeah.
And those people aren't exactly... Those people would end their careers nowadays. That doesn't mean racism has gone away. What it means is that racism has had to become more subtle. And this is what I worry about here, is that what we're seeing is basically... Rather than apology, I worry that this is basically them pushing up a Trojan horse to the gay community and saying, hey, we're your friends now.
I do think you're conflating a person with a movement, but you've got something to say.
Yeah, I want to be keeping a close eye on his new incarnation of his organization. Now, it is way watered down. There's only 3 volunteers. They're not even employees. It's a limited executive board, but his new organization is going to be called Reduce Fear. And what he's going to be targeting is within the church. He says, I'm not going to argue with people that aren't part of my community, but we already have enough differing opinions within our community. I mean, you have theologians and theology professors saying, oh, this is so harmful that Chambers is now saying that gay people can go to heaven. He's targeting those people to say, hey, you're saying this out of fear. I'm going to be keeping a close eye on that and a close watch on that to see whether it really, is that very subtle homophobia.
I think the proof of what goes on, and I think the proof of whether or not this is really an apology and whether or not this is actually a sea change is going to be in what happens next. We can't know right now. I just did that. That's kind of funny. Mm-hmm. Hey, Harold Camping, what's up? But the thing is this is why I can accept it as a social apology, but I'm not expecting him, and this is what you've been concerned about, is just the liberal response to this, that he's suddenly become an ally.
Yeah, I worry that people are just reading headlines that, oh, he's completely changed, like this is the end of How the Grinch Stole Christmas, where his heart grows 3 sizes, and everyone holds their arms around him, and we all sing together because he's now a friend. He's not a friend yet. People are your friend not by what they say. And I've seen this with politicians. I've seen this with leaders of all stripes throughout history. The proof is in your action. You don't say that you're an ally. You act as an ally. And until he does that, I'm incredibly skeptical about his motivations.
Yeah.
I worry that it isn't the sense that he's felt shame for his actions. I think that he's felt heat for his actions.
Okay.
And that there are two different kinds of homophobes in this new environment where the majority is now pro-gay rights. What I think is that he understands that there's an inevitability here to him losing on this culture war, and he needs to sort of adjust to a new environment where other people are doubling down. I think he may be more self-aware and more realistic than people like Pat Robertson, but that doesn't mean his attitudes are different.
You see, and that's the major difference between us, is I actually think he is feeling shame. But I think shame comes from social pressure. He's not feeling shame because of his God, because you can't feel shame from something that doesn't exist. The thing he's feeling shame for is the cause of shame, which is social pressure. Shame is a social phenomenon. And, you know, the problem isn't that he's feeling shame. I think we can recognize that he's feeling it. The problem is what he's doing with it. And it's good that Exodus International is closing. This is definitely a victory. But I think we all agree that we have to keep track of what's happening next. And I almost think that we're doing a disservice to the community. And I think this is what I'm going to end on is, you know, we're doing what he wants. We're giving him exactly what he wants now. Whether we give him good attention or bad attention, I think we're giving him a chance to make the discussion about how they feel about it rather than how the damage that it's done. And I think if we focus on the fact that, yes, it's over, the best thing we can do for society, the best thing that I think would let us most heal from is to let him become irrelevant. Okay. You were on the bad side. You recognize it was the bad side. You're going away. We can stop paying attention to you now and focus on the people who are doing damage and focus on the damage that's been done. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. When we come back, we're going to catch up with the guy...
David Williamson, Central Freethought.
Yeah, and the...
Central Florida Freethought.
The literature distribution. Weird day for me.
Out of the briny depths of the internet comes a comic book podcast so powerful it cannot be contained by a single continent. Mike and Paul, save the universe!
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Paul Rudd.
If you're an unsatisfied comics fan, we want to help you fix better comics.
And if you've never picked up a comic before in your life, we want to help you find what could be your new favorite thing.
On Mike and Paul Save the Universe, we love the bejesus out of comics, and so should you.
Find us online at mikeandpaul.com.
Billy, I'm a certified ghost expert.
Wow, that's so credible.
Billy, your great-great-grandmother says she loves you and to give me your lunch money.
Aw, anything for family. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I know.
So, picking you up at 8 tonight?
Sure.
How do I get to your place again?
Get off the freeway, turn left at the burger joint, past the Humanist Center, right at the...
What? Humanist Center?
Oh, yeah. You know, the place where freethinkers have their meetings, hold events, access the resource library, drop their kids off for daycare.
This could be you and your friends in the near future. Contribute to the Humanists of Washington Humanist Center Fund to establish a physical home for freethinkers in the Puget Sound. Go to humanistsofwashington.org and contribute today. That's humanistsofwashington.org.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. Mike, we had to go into the break, but you had one more point you wanted to make.
Yeah, I don't necessarily want somebody to just go away. If he's done something that's actually something you can prosecute... I mean, and we're talking about demonstrable harm.
That, okay, yeah.
I don't think that just saying, I'm sorry, I'm going to go away now and stop hurting people in the future doesn't change the fact that he's hurt people in the past. And I know that there is a movement in California and other places to look at whether this is a practice that in its harm can be banned.
The restorative or gay reparative therapy for minors, for teens?
The forcing your children into summer camp where they're felt to... be worthless and destroy their mentally. I think that's something that if he has done that sort of harm and if it is illegally actionable, it should be.
And here is a situation where I'm just going to come out and say this. This is where the Christian substrate, social substrate of America has harmed us, is in the way that we treat children. Our laws are antiquated. They're back from a time when I think we treated, when we thought of kids as farming equipment just as much as we did as children. And I think it's stuff like that that lets this stuff go on and not even be considered illegal.
Well, it's thinking of kids as a thing that you are not a guardian of, but you're an owner of.
Yeah. So if you like what you're hearing tonight and or would like to hear more of that, actually, Becky and I are going on tour.
We're doing
a tour of the western states of the United States. We have some dates for you guys. July 10th will be in Sacramento, California. July 11th will be in Villa Park, California. July 16th will be in Mesa, Arizona. July 25th will be in St. Louis, Missouri. And July 18th will be in Skokie, Illinois. We're going to be recording live episodes in front of a live studio audience, which will air later on in Ask an Atheist. We're still looking to put shows together in Tucson, Arizona, Oklahoma City, or Tulsa, Oklahoma, and somewhere in the northern plain states. So if you would like to have a show up, if you're in the western Washington states, and you'd like to have meet up with us and have a post show and a show, maybe a little bit of a talk, a little bit of a Q&A, go to askanatheist.tv in our special content area. You'll see the two oil change trip tour, because what we're doing is two oil changes worth of driving.
Yes.
Should be a lot of fun. Now, we'd like to talk to David Williamson. He is the director of Central Florida Free Thought, a community which is dedicated to secular activism and state church separation efforts. The CFL has been responding to the distribution of religious texts on school grounds with a literature distribution of their own. We last spoke with David in January when they were getting started with the distribution program. Welcome back to the show, David. How are you?
Hey, doing well. Thanks so much for having us on.
Hey, no problem. So we talked last in January, and you gave us a rundown. But why don't you give us some background story on what was actually going on here?
Sure. I'll try to just hit the highlights, but it's pretty deep.
I imagine.
You're knee-deep in it. First, let me say this. Since I'm a co-plaintiff in a lawsuit, I may not be able to speak as freely as I would like and as comfortably, because I'm not used to being kind of bound by making sure anything I say is on the record. So forgive me in advance for that, but I'll do my best.
I understand.
The World Changes of Florida distributed Bibles for the last 2 years in Orange County because they waived a consent decree around in Orange County saying, look what happened down there. So there's a consent decree that is non-binding anywhere but Collier County schools that was used to get into the Orange County schools for the last 2 years. And that consent decree allows for passive distribution of Bibles, which is not the Gideon style, where you make every kid come to the front of the class and grab one, but it's where they put them on the table and walk away and can't stand there and proselytize. That's part of the problem with our claim is that they did not do that, and that was what was expected of us, but not the other group. So, they've done that for 2 years now. We heard about it just in January. The school board refused to stop that. We gave them some suggested language for how to do that legally without having viewpoint discrimination claims, and then they said no. So we decided to do our own distribution through the help of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, American Atheists, American Humanists, Secular Student Alliance, and the Florida Atheists and Secular Humanists down in the South Florida area.
So what text did you ultimately decide on distributing at the schools?
Well, we didn't make those decisions locally. We solicited donations from groups. We got brochures from American Humanists and Secular Student Alliance. We had non-tracts, which are tracts for the non-believer, from FFRF, which they're pretty cute. And then we had five different books from the American Atheist, and then one essay, which is a compilation of speeches, really, by Robert Greene Ingersoll, called The Truth. So those were the ones that were picked. Those were the organizations that helped out, and they were sent down probably about 12 different items, and about half of those were rejected, in most of them books.
What sort of items were rejected?
Well, they rejected four books. They rejected four non-tracts, and let me tell you a couple of things about those. A Letter to a Christian Nation, believe it or not, was censored. Jesus is Dead by Robert Price. What on Earth is an Atheist by Madeline Murray O'Hare, and The Truth as well. And then a book that is not related to the Bible but is still appropriate for religious scripture analysis is Why I'm Not a Muslim by Eben Warwick. So those were the books that were objected to and not allowed to be distributed And then the four non-tracts were, of course, everybody's favorite, an X-rated book, Sex and Obscenity in the Bible, what does the Bible say about abortion, Why Jesus, and Dear Believer. So those four were also censored.
So they rejected those. Did they give any reasons, or was it just rejected?
No, they did. They provided that, and we followed up again, and then they followed up back again with us. So the Letters to a Christian Nation described in some cases, and I'm going to read some of this from our filing, they described the sacrifice of virgins, killing and eating of children in order to ensure fertility, feeding infants to sharks, and the burning of widows so they can follow their husbands into the next world. These are things that that Harris has in his book. And the school board said that these concepts were not age appropriate.
And these concepts come from religious scripture, which is freely, passively given out at schools, though. Is that correct?
Right, right. And they all appear in the New International Version of the Bible, as all versions. And then he points this out, Harris points this out three paragraphs later, but I guess that didn't matter. With the exception of the sharks, which is basically, I have not read that recently, but in the Bible there are two bears that are sent to kill 42 kids that were making fun of a bald guy.
Yep.
So.
Absolutely.
So there was, yeah. Did you talk to them about possibly saying that the Bible wasn't age appropriate then?
We have said that all along, and that is certainly something that we continue to stand by. However, our lawsuit does not ask for that, because we have no right to ask for that. We were only asking for equal treatment and free speech. So we're suing in U.S. District Court for violations of our freedom of speech as well as equal access.
So we understand that, you know, you're limited in what you can say because you have pending litigation, but the day of the text distribution came in Florida, how did that go down?
Well, as we line out in the complaint, most of our materials were prohibited, as we discussed, and they were prohibited, unfortunately, at the last minute, so it made it difficult for us to react in time. We did, however, have 5,000 items of literature to give out, and we gave out about 2,000 items based on our approximate counts. So in the schools, when we were there the day of the event, we were asked to follow these guidelines to the letter, and we did. However, the one thing that they kind of stood out in our mind was our inability to hand out an invitation to a pizza party. This was an event that was held at the First Unitarian Church of Orlando the afternoon of the event, and these were removed from several of our displays at some schools, but not all schools. And then back in January, however, there were invitations to church worship services being passed out, and there were religious club invitations reminding people about the clubs in the school. And so we felt like that was unequal and unfair treatment, and that's part of our claim.
Even back when I was going to school, come to our church pizza party or come to our church was a common part of church evangelism on my high school campus.
Right. I can't speak to the legality of that, but if these are outside groups, not student groups. So, you know, student groups can say come to the religious club all day long, but they seem to do it differently when we were there. And we're not sure why that is, but that's part of our filing. Additionally, there was assistance given at one school to remove Bibles from a vehicle and take them onto the campus. In fact, the church group that did that actually photographed it, and it's still on Facebook. And
where school officials were actually helping the world changers bring the Bibles into the schools?
Yes, an employee of the school apparently using a vehicle that belongs to the school. That's what we understand. Yes.
Wow.
And in other cases, there were people at the tables. At the same school, there were people at the tables the entire time. And at another school, two out of the three schools that we knew about, because we have a Secular Student Alliance Club at those at the time, there was adults there. At another school, there were students there, and another school, there was a dry erase board. So these passive distribution rules were not enforced on this day, apparently.
Wow. I work in a high school, and we often have, you know, Young Life little flyers saying, hey, come to the Young Life meeting after school this Thursday, you know, at 5 o'clock or whatever. And that happens sort of without incident. I can't imagine what it would be like if a similar, you know, organization would be prohibited from handing out the same things. And I'm kind of shocked that this is happening. One of the things that was said is this: the materials were inappropriate for the maturity level of the high schoolers. Who decides which materials correlate to teenagers' maturity levels? Is it the school board? Is it the curricular designers? What's happening with that?
Well, this is something that's external to the curriculum. It's not like these books would probably be allowed in the library, and certainly school clubs could probably hand them out as well. But we were held to a different standard, and that certainly makes sense. We don't want anybody and everybody running into the schools just handing out things willy-nilly. There needs to be a process, and we're in favor of that. But it appears that we were not treated fairly because the materials that we have brought into the school or attempted to bring into the school address the exact same content, however, from a different viewpoint. And when we talk about viewpoint and which ones can and cannot be allowed, that's when you talk about viewpoint discrimination, which is what is the problem that arose in Collier County, causing them to be able to file a claim against Collier County back in 2009 or 2010. But the important thing here is not to get bogged down in these materials. While we did make a fair effort to distribute materials that questioned the claims of religion and criticized those that are worthy, the point is that none of this should be happening, and we've advocated all along that this is a waste of resources, a waste of time, and certainly allows organizations to come on campus, whether they're manned or whether they're staffed or unstaffed tables, and proselytize and advertise and bully kids into adhering to the majority of religion. And that's pretty much what these things are doing.
That's a common theme with the atheism community and our response to these sorts of things. There's now that atheism monument bench. I think, is that elsewhere in Florida? I think
yeah, we'll be there next Sunday in Stark, or Saturday in Stark.
Yeah, and back in 2008, up here in Washington, there were people putting there was the whole thing about the Christmas creche and how we wanted to the FFRF came and put a sign down. We wanted to put a sign down, and what everybody is saying is we would prefer that we just keep religion and we keep these viewpoints not as a part of education. That people shouldn't be allowed to come on and basically advertise in the political and in the educational setting. And that's our preferred outlook. But if they can be there, so can we.
Hmm. Right. And when we have different courts, different levels of courts, different types of judges, whether they're elected or appointed, making these decisions, they're going to be disparate. They're going to be different. And we can't get necessarily a firm decision until we move up and up and up in these different cases. And I'm pleased to see that they'll be dealing with prayer in the Supreme Court this year, and hopefully they'll deal with that favorably. But it's difficult to know what to expect because you don't know what courts are going to decide, what judge is going to pull the case. And we've got to do the best we can, and I think that each group is involved in litigation. It is a last-ditch effort. It is the last resort, and I've heard people ask, why are you doing this? And we explain to them, well, we don't want to do this, but what we've got now is we've got a violation of our free speech rights, and we were not treated equally under the law. So we have every right to request, to basically ask for them to allow these things. Or another thing is we don't want the school board to allow one group and not another, but we would prefer that no group be allowed. And this is just a waste of resources. There was so much time spent with us. I can't even imagine how much time would have spent reviewing the Bible. If that happened, and I can't even imagine how many times volunteers have been checked into the schools and all the resources with that. It's unreal that this is part of the process of running a school nowadays.
So to that end, there's been recent news that you guys plan to hold yearly distribution days until World Changers isn't allowed its passive Bible school on campus anymore. Is that still in the plan, or does the lawsuit sort of put that on hold?
No, it's absolutely the plan. I hope we can resolve this, in the next several months. But I am not familiar with the legal process, and it certainly could be longer than that. But it's our intention to move forward with this continuously and to encourage other religious traditions to do this, because I think what we need to make sure is that the majority religious tradition, in this case, in almost every jurisdiction, it's going to be Christianity. We've got to make sure that this is not represented as the state religion. And that's what people perceive when they see it at school, when they see it in the court, when they see it on public property. This is the perception that especially young people get. And we need to make sure that is not the case. And we certainly need to make sure that these young people know that there is a home for them, that there is an opportunity to interface with people in a club or in the community that understand their position. And the Recovering from Religion Project is a great part of that. And we're hoping to involve ourselves with that community here in Orlando that just started at UCF.
So, you mentioned the folks need a home, the students need to know that. Have you gotten any response like that from, students in Florida or from families in Florida with kids in school that, we definitely need to be out there as well?
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by the last part of that, but I'll tell you that we did get a web designer that's helping us out because of this. We have probably 40 new members in the organization because of this. We had lawyers step forward and ask to help. We've got all types of people that want to put resources to play here to make sure that we have our representation and we have the help we need to make organizations and community building efforts happen. And we're really pleased about that. And unfortunately, the, this has to happen this way. But we're benefiting from it, and the organization and the community of free thought in areas growing because of it.
Do you know if any of the schools involved have SSA communities on campus?
Yes, there were three at the time of the distribution, and as you know, and I'm sure many of your listeners who are involved in those know, those kind of come and go. Sometimes they're difficult to keep the longstanding clubs there because there's so many students moving through the schools every few years. But
yeah.
We had three, and now we have two plus one more. There's a new college campus, SSA, here. The UCF campus is going strong, and there's a new Stetson University campus. An important note, though, and I think something that I'd like to write and talk more about in a year from now is, are we going to see more secular student alliance clubs because of these activities, whether it be the Bible distribution response themselves or just in support of our efforts? We've already got a new group at Oviedo High School because of our efforts to the Bible distribution.
It was really nice seeing the Wakaiva High School Secular Student Alliance being very energized by this sort of thing. And it's I follow them on Facebook and am really encouraged by a lot of the activism and leadership that's being shown by our young people.
Yeah, Daniel Koster started that club last year, and he's going off to a new college to start another club and stay involved. But we're pleased as well, and we hope that we can support the students that need help getting clubs started. And I would encourage everyone in the Free Thought, Atheist Visibility Movement, whatever you want to call it, to offer your help and look for those opportunities, whether it's parents with kids that are that age or, you know, clubs that you hear about online, or look for them on Facebook. Look for secular clubs on Facebook and see if they need your support in the area.
So if people would like to help you in your fight and in what you guys are doing, where is the best place for them to go? Where do you need the most help from the community right now?
Well, you know, staying alert to these things and knowing that they're going on, being able to report them to FFRF, American Atheists, American Humanists, whoever can react is fantastic. But on the ground, we need boots on the ground that can do distributions like this, that can do local research. And I would just say that if you want to pay attention to what we're doing and how it's going, you can follow us at Facebook at CFL Free Thought. That's our public page. And certainly be in touch if you want to get on our mailing list, and we'll keep everybody informed. But we want to make sure that people realize that a response is appropriate and necessary. And it's not always going to go as well or as badly as it does in other cases, but we've got to act so that we don't, you know, when we don't have action, we have an implied acceptance of what's happening.
Absolutely. David Williamson is the director of the Central Florida Free Thought Community, and they've been involved with the text distribution, literature distribution, down in Florida. I would very much like to talk to you again as the story evolves. We'd really like to keep on top of this. Thank you very much.
You bet. Thanks so much.
Thanks. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We're going to come back. We're going to handle some emails, do some more news, talk about Oklahoma a little bit.
Atheism TV. News, events, community, entertainment, debates, conferences. A massive repository of over 3,000 recent and fascinating atheist videos from all over the internet. Or watch The Infidel, our own regular news show. Visit the shopping area and buy something for that special atheist in your life. Or rent captivating shows, movies, and documentaries directly in your browser. Atheism TV, the world's best source of atheist videos. Visit atheismtv.com.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
Doyle's Public House is Tacoma's number one spot for the best selection of import brews and Irish whiskey.
Football matches and Red Sox games, knowledge night and no cover live music.
Doyle's is your spot.
Check us out at doylespublichouse.com or stop by for a proper libation and soda bread at 2nd and St. Helens Avenue in Tacoma.
Like us on Facebook for all the latest updates and specials.
Doyle's in Tacoma.
2nd and St. Helens Avenue in Tacoma. doylespublichouse.com.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on our web radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And we have one answer to Peggy's challenge this week. We'd like to thank Erica from Seattle. Thank you very much for your donation. Thank you very much for keeping the lights on here at Ask an Atheist and for another season. We've had one fundraiser.
Yeah, thanks to those who came out on Friday night.
Thank you very much to those of you who came out. It was a really great time. I'd like to thank the bands, the Animals and Cars, Variety Hour, Sleepy Pilot, Body Box. They did great shows.
Stand-up guys.
It was a lot of fun. It was really funny that the Animals and Cars, in honor of what the show they were doing, they put on those little choir vestment thingies for their first couple trips.
Yeah, their little cross-filled frocks.
It was really funny. And everybody was great sports about it. There were people there who weren't necessarily atheists, but definitely wanted to help us out. And it was really cool. That said, we've got another fundraiser coming, but we'll talk about that later. We have a very interesting story. You know, in the last month or so, there was a big tornado that went through Oklahoma.
Two of them, yeah.
And reporter Joe Klein of Time magazine claimed that organized groups of secular humanists weren't doing disaster relief or service work. This week's feature story on Time magazine about how service can save us focuses on giving returning soldiers a sense of purpose through service work to ameliorate symptoms of PTSD. His comment focused on soldiers providing support in the wake of the Oklahoma tornadoes. And apart from special and ongoing campaigns by secular humanists to do charity and service work, that's the thing, is they were actually explicitly saying, where are the atheists?
Yeah.
We've heard this before.
Yep, it was just a throwaway comment in terms of Team Rubicon is a group of soldiers, and they're handing out hot meals to, you know, evacuees. But funny enough, you didn't see organized groups of secular humanists. And it was just this throwaway comment in the middle of nowhere. I imagine if he had ever said, funny, you never see groups of organized Jews doing this. The outrage that would happen.
Yeah, this is these cheap throwaway lines to make atheists look bad. One, they're false. Two, they're common. I will never have a subscription for the Tacoma News Tribune until I get an apology from them, because back in 2010, they basically just said the same thing about us in the wake of the Haiti earthquakes. And we had just, I had just finished giving to the Red Cross. We had been in the middle of putting things together with Tacoma Atheists to raise money for the Haiti earthquake relief. And then I open up the newspaper and there it is. We're doing nothing.
And worse than that, local atheist and humanist groups specifically wanted to answer that and say, we want to give you a letter to the editor responding to this and saying, in fact, that is not the case. They refused to run any of them.
Absolutely.
Of course, they had no problem running the one that was completely talking out of its hind end.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's the way this sort of stuff goes. I guess I would have a higher set of standards for Time magazine than I would for the Tacoma News Tribune. And I just can't help but feel disappointed that there isn't an editor there that would say, is it really necessary to put a cheap shot in the middle of this article?
Well, if you're a journalist, and if you're a journalist organization, the idea is that you have to have some sort of integrity, that if you're going to say something, and if you're going to allow people to say things, one, we don't have a fairness doctrine anymore, but if you want to show the news, you have to report the facts. And they're just not reporting the facts. These are people who are making money and pandering to people who don't think and don't care over facts.
And facts that could be easily solved with a simple Google search.
Yeah, this Google search will turn up tons of stuff.
4,300 people donated more than $120,000 to the family of Rebecca Witzman, who she promised to donate to charity for whatever money she didn't need. And this is the lady on CNN.
Yeah, this is the one where Wolf Blitzer said, hey, did you thank God for saving your baby from the tornado? And she said, she hedged and said, I'm an atheist.
After three times of being asked, he's like, do you thank the Lord? Do you thank the Lord?
No!
Why are you even bringing that up?
Yeah. Foundation Beyond Belief raised over $45,000 for Operation USA and the Regional Food Bank of Oklahoma. Atheist Giving Aid raised over $18,000 that will be given to local relief groups in Moore, Oklahoma, and directly to families that need help. Members of the Free OK Atheist Group helped families who needed wreckage removed from their property. Free OK teamed with Panera Bread and Krispy Kreme to get breakfast to cemetery cleanup volunteers with the Frontline Church in Moore, and to volunteers working through the Moore Community Center in the first week of response.
So you have organized groups of atheists actually working side by side with church groups to come together as a community. And this gentleman just cavalierly writes us off.
And that's the thing, is we're not saying, this is the time, if there's ever going to be a time when we need to set aside the atheism religious thing, it's times like these. There are people who need help. Their community has been destroyed. And this is when it's time for community organizations to step in and help.
I really have to say that if my home had been destroyed by a natural disaster or by anything, terrorist attack, alien invasion, I don't care. If my life is lying in ruins around me and someone shows up and they want to help me, I'm going to accept that help, and I'm not going to put a litmus test on it.
Yeah.
The only possible reason that I would even care what this person's religion is if they start coming at me like an Amway salesman trying to sell it. Because it's the last time I want to hear that garbage. But if they're not, and in this case, they're not, then I don't care. I don't care if it's a group of Satanists that they want to clean up my house and help me get family heirlooms out of the broken debris that's left of my home. I'm going to say, hey, Satanist, help me out here.
Yeah, it's you know, I wouldn't put a litmus test on them as long as they're not putting a litmus test on me. And that's one of the things that most secular organizations that I've seen doing charity work don't do. We do not proselytize. We do not require that you be a non-believer in order to be served by charity work. You know, there's just two more things that I really wanted to mention, because as a teacher, I love it. You know, the Free Thought Oklahoma, Free OK Conference is going on right now. And the conference organizers held a book drive to benefit schools that were affected by the tornadoes. This is not just serving a hot meal in the moment. This is long thought. This is the long game. Hey, you know what? These are kids that are going to need to be anchored in something that's comforting. Let's do books for their schools that we can put in their backpacks to take home so they can rebuild their home, their living room, their library, their bookshelf.
This is Time Magazine treating us like a heel in wrestling. We're to throw that throwaway line out there. That atheists aren't doing anything. That's cheap heat. That's easy. I mean, it gets people outraged and angry and identify with the story. We're being used for their propaganda purposes.
But why? Time Magazine, I mean, this is not WorldNet Daily. This is not the 700 Club. With them, I'd expect it.
But you and I both know how interest in a fair debate and the progressive stance and all that stuff goes right out the window once you have a group of people who are willing to challenge the idea of a magical sky fairy.
Oh, absolutely. But I guess what I'm hoping is that, yes, every writer for Time Magazine has their own personal biases. But I would like to think that before something sees print in Time Magazine, it has to run a gamut of editors who are going to say, is it really necessary to start a fight in this article? When this article is really about people finding a sense of purpose after war? Do we really need to take a completely different fight that has nothing to do with this topic?
They're not thinking about their integrity. They're thinking about the check.
The thing that you said, this article focuses on helping people after they come back from war, after they're scarred, after they feel purposeless. And this in the face of last week, where we had representatives saying that service members don't need support from chaplains. I mean, there is a tremendous amount of both service work, you know, to home, you know, in-state and in our country service work, and that's been done by secular humanists, and a tremendous amount of support networks that are being done by the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, by atheists in the military. I mean, why go to that cheap shot?
You guys are asking questions. I'm not asking questions here. Journalism is something that's been important to me. I studied journalism in school when I still thought going to school was an option. You know, it's stuff like, it was important to me. And I think journalism is dying. Real journalism out there, it's going away because, well, print is dead, blah, blah, blah. But not only is print dead, the idea of integrity, I think, it has become a problem because people don't read facts anymore. If people want to read facts, they peruse Wikipedia. I mean, it's
well, for the next 10 minutes, that's the fact.
Yeah.
On Wikipedia.
And that's part of the problem.
You don't crowdsource reality. That's not how this works.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of where we're at. And if we're going to, if we're jumping into our, you know, the media mode. I think what the problem is not necessarily the media, but I think it's us because we consume this garbage. And I think that as long as we demand media that never tells us anything that we don't want to hear,
yeah,
and we decide to pull into our own little corner where I never have to hear a commentator or a fact that I disagree with, then we're all part of that problem.
But that's the common retort, is we're just giving people what they want to hear.
Well, everyone's at fault, is what I'm saying.
And that's fine, but I'd rather yell at the people who are getting money for that. I'd rather yell at Joe Klein, who is, as far as I can tell, he may be the best journalist out there. He may have written some of the best stuff. He may have Pulitzer Prizes wallpapering his house, but if he's willing to throw away that cheap line with no facts, he's a terrible journalist. The end.
I'm not arguing with that.
Yeah, and there's an argument that I'm hearing, that I hear in my head, that I know a lot of religious people who have a stake in making us look bad. This isn't a lot of money. You're not donating a lot of money. Just let me put something out there. This movement that you're seeing here, if you're going to call us the new atheism movement, you have to recognize that we're new. We've only been doing this about a decade. We're still getting spun up. We're still building community events. We're still building communities. We're still figuring out who we are as a movement and the kind of things that we want to do this one movement. One of the things that came out of it really early is the idea of community service. We don't want to just help us. We want to help everybody. We want to help create the better world and the iterative process of civilization.
What gets me again is the ease with which he could debunk his entire sentence.
Yeah.
The cheap shot didn't
one
need
Google
to happen.
Search.
Due diligence. I mean, he's a journalist. At the very least, a Google search is worth it.
And here's, Mike, where I will disagree with you. Some of the facts you can crowdsource because you have enough people tweeting at Joe Klein, writing into Time Magazine saying, hey, this is patently false. You'll be forced to look at the facts.
And that's exactly what he wants. We are a lol cow. We are really easy to... It's really easy to get us mad because... We're the little guy because we're being picked on all the time. We want to help, and because it's cheap heat, it makes you good with look good to religious people, and we'll be able to spread the story out of our outrage. We're easy to use, and we're being used. I am being used.
I don't mind being used in this way.
If it means that we can call this stuff out when it happens, I'm all for it. But again, I'm just shocked that an editor didn't catch that. Because, I mean, he can have Pulitzer Prizes all over his walls, but again, there's a process there. It's not nearly as stringent as, say, like the peer review process, certainly.
Right.
But there's going to be someone who's going to go across their desk and go, I don't know why you're picking a fight here. If you're going to pick a fight, do an article about that fight.
Yeah.
Why are we talking about this? Why do we need to take a cheap shot at this thing, this organization, this movement, this group of people, especially when a simple Google search would say, okay, tornado, atheist, Oklahoma, you would have found a ton of people, one, raising money for Rebecca Witzman.
Yeah.
You would have found people raising money for other things, doing food programs. We exist on the internet. It's not like it's hard to find us.
Yeah. And we're really easy to find. I just... between stories like this that I see with remarkable regularity and, you know, the sort of science reporting that Potholer 54 talks about on YouTube, the one of the best YouTube channels out there as far as I'm concerned, and he's just showing, you know, maybe I'm showing my hand a little bit with the journalism thing, but this is just bad for us. This is completely bad for us. So I should move on before I completely blow my stack. Obama says religious organizations can separate people. Many Catholic people go straight. This is an interesting story from Ireland. In his recent trip to Belfast, President Obama drew criticism and offense from Catholics who saw a statement of unity as an assault on religious schooling. In addressing mistrust between Catholic and Protestant communities, Obama suggested that segregated towns and buildings discourage empathy and cooperation. His words have spurred the group Catholics Vote to start a petition that refers to Obama's alleged growing hostility towards American Catholics.
Hey, people who get professionally angry are professionally angry.
Yeah, I feel like that's me today, though.
we're, we still, you know, come on. I don't say we're necessarily the same as this. We're not constantly looking for fake reasons to get mad at people, because we have plenty of real ones.
Yeah.
Obama is not out to kill Catholicism.
No, I mean, he's not.
There are plenty of legitimate ways to criticize the president. This is not one of them.
And you know, the growing hostility is, okay, we're going to say that women should be entitled to have their birth control covered. Oh, my goodness, assault on Catholic traditions and Catholicism.
Even though 98% of Catholics have said they use birth control.
Right.
Here's the thing is, it's a straight line observation. The idea that if you take your children and you put them in a school where they only see one point of view, they're not going to have the tools to live in a pluralistic society.
And this is what Obama actually said. If towns remain divided, if Catholics have their schools and buildings and Protestants have theirs, if we can't see ourselves in one another, and if fear or resentment are allowed to harden, that encourages division and discourages cooperation.
He's trying to kill Catholics!
But there is a weird lining to this cloud. Bill Donahue.
Oh, boo.
There are plenty of reasons to be critical of President Obama's policies as they relate to the Catholic Church. But the reaction on the part of conservatives, many of whom are Catholic, over his speech in Ireland is simply insane. Obama was not condemning Catholic schools. He was condemning segregation. Where social divisions exist, the prospects for social harmony are dim.
Duh-buh.
Your favorite guy, Mike.
Bill Donahue. If you're not familiar with Bill Donahue of the Catholic League for Religious Civil Rights, he's probably one of the worst human beings on the planet. And if there is, I think that he has some sort of off-camera bet to say the worst things in defense of the Catholic Church. And he's said horrible things in defense of the Catholic Church. So this is jarring, and this leads me to believe that maybe the idea of Bill Donahue as a voice of reason,
I know,
means he's a pod person or something.
That's kind of why I wanted to end on this. Is Bill Donahue, somebody I think everybody involved in Ask an Atheist has yelled at one point or another, said something fairly clear and supportive of a pluralistic society.
He's like a monster, and the monster is being nice here. It's weird. I'm like, wait, it's like you want to? Are you a robot? I mean. It doesn't feel like the real Bill Donahue, because he is somebody who will exploit anything, including things that are fake controversies manufacturversies,
as
they call them.
As far as I can tell, the Catholic League is him and whoever interns with him that year. And his job...
Also him.
And him. And his job is to read the news, get angry at somebody, and talk about and blog about it, and go and do the talk show circuit about it. Hey, it's great money if you can do it. But I mean, I did that. He did that open letter I did about being adopted by a Catholic family. That was him.
Nobody is elected to adopt you, Sam.
No,
he's the one who said that. Oh well, the problem with this priest who is raping children at this orphanage. Oh well, he's not a pedophile. Well, those children are all over 12, so he's actually gay, and that's the problem. And he actually derailed an entire CNN panel that way. He says horrible things all the time.
Yeah. And so I guess we're going to have to leave it there. This is Ask an Atheist. My name is Sam Mulvey. With me was Rebecca Friedman and Mike Gillis. Our music, as usual, is by Chris Coleman, Phil Whitfield, and Steve Siemens. Our post show is at Doyle's in an hour. Catch you next week.
Play Radio, your conversation station. KLAY Lakewood, Tacoma on 1180 AM.